Hi, everyone, and welcome to Radio Cloud Native from Mirantis, where we break down the news on Kubernetes, the cloud native ecosystem, open source, and the wider world of tech. I'm your host, Eric Gregory. Today, we're chatting about the release of Kubernetes 1.28, ongoing convulsions around enterprise open source, a vulnerability at the heart of NPM, and more. So let's jump right in. Last week saw the release of Kubernetes 1.28, codenamed Planternetes. The theme for this release is the kind of ongoing care and cultivation that brings a garden to fruitful abundance. And appropriately, we see 12 enhancements reaching stable status, including several that should mark significant quality of life improvements. Let's take a look at some of the most notable changes and enhancements. First off, the project has expanded the supported SKU between control plane and node versions by one minor version. Previously, worker node versions could lag two minor versions behind a control plane on the latest supported release. Now, nodes can run three minor releases behind, giving teams a little more runway for upgrades, which will be especially welcome to operators who want to minimize disruption of nodes with critical workloads. Speaking of minimizing disruption, an enhancement for recovery from non-graceful node shutdown is graduating to stable. This lets stateful workloads fail over to a new node if the original, catastrophically explodes, and can even be helpful in some cases of intentional node shutdown where the kubelet might not have registered the shutdown. Previously, pods belonging to a stateful set could get stuck in a terminating state indefinitely. With this new stable enhancement, you can mark a node as out of service, clean up the mess from the old node, and initiate recovery to the new one. Another nice quality of life feature graduating to stable is the automatic assignment of a default storage class for persistent volume claims in cases where you don't provide a value. This feature is also retroactive, so the control plane goes back and does the same thing for any existing PVC without a storage class name. Finally, as we talked about last episode, one really interesting new alpha feature enables users to define sidecar containers and specifications. The official Kubernetes release blog describes this as, quote, API awareness of sidecar containers. This new feature gate helps define an appropriate lifecycle for sidecar containers in multi-container pods that might help in configuration, networking, log, and metrics collection, and so on, and could be particularly useful in sidecar-heavy realms like service mesh. We did a deep dive into the sidecar container feature last month, so I recommend checking that out if you're interested in learning more. There are more features to explore. If you're interested, check out the official release blog at kubernetes.io/blog. Taking a step back from Kubernetes to cloud trends as a whole, Racky Joy of the CyberRant Substack wrote a, CyberRant, titled Why You Should Move Back to Data Centers, that makes a nice prism for kind of thinking about cloud trends here in summer 2023. He summarizes the state of the art in a set of TLDR bullet points at the top of the post. Quote, you want to run burst workloads in the cloud. It's basically terrible for everything else. It's not cost-effective to have dedicated hardware in cloud. It's not secure to share hardware with anyone. For cost and security reasons, you should consider being hybrid cloud or have much of your workloads in data centers. This is not being hand-wavy or not providing solutions. Hybrid cloud, where you own the hardware but run cloud technologies in CI/CD combined with what makes sense in public cloud, is a great option in 2023 and beyond. Unquote. And that pretty much sums it up, right? For all the fun talk about wholesale repatriation that we've heard especially early this year, what we're really seeing is an industry-wide recognition of both the need and the capability to rebalance. So we're using the best fit tools for the jobs at hand. The cloud-native ecosystem as a whole has hit a point of maturity where that sort of hybrid cloud strategy looks not just possible, but almost table stakes when you're thinking about cost-effectiveness and flexibility and security and control. Joy's article is well worth reading in its entirety. It starts from a consideration of CPU speculation attacks, a form of cyber attack in which tenants of shared hardware are particularly vulnerable. These exploits leverage the speculative execution functionality on modern processors that boosts performance by guessing what operation will be executed next, and then using that guess if it proves correct. But this process leaves breadcrumbs that malicious actors can use to piece together sensitive data. This vulnerability is naturally pretty significant for cloud environments, and while some cloud providers have put forth mitigations, they're only partial fixes. For Joy, the solution to this and many other problems is hybrid cloud. In his words, quote, manage your infrastructure and applications via code. Still buy a CNAPP, Cloud Native Application Protection Platform, or something similar for security, especially for your internet accessible systems. Your attack surface will be much smaller in your data centers than public cloud providers. enjoy basically all the benefits of cloud with much better security and far lower cost, unquote. From Joy's mouth to the market's ears. Okay, we'll continue the steady zoom out to the world of enterprise open source. We talked in the last episode about changes to the availability of Red Hat Enterprise Linux source code. Since then, CIQ, Oracle, and SUSE announced the creation of a new nonprofit trade association called the Open Enterprise Linux Association. The new group is intended to serve as a collaborative host for source code that will be compatible with common RHEL versions and that can feed into downstream distros. You can read more at openela.org, including the spicy subhead, quote, "No subscriptions, no passwords, no barriers, freeloaders welcome." Meanwhile, HashiCorp announced that it's changing the license for Terraform from the open source Mozilla Public License 2.0 that it's used for almost 9 years to the Business Source License 1.1 created by MariaDB for projects wishing to disallow production use and particularly commercial use competitive to the project's corporate originators and sponsors. Perhaps inspired somewhat by the OpenELA, a group of Terraform using infrastructure vendors, including Pulumi, Envzero, and others, launched the OpenTF initiative, which aims first to persuade HashiCorp to reverse course and, failing that, to create a fork of Terraform versions predating the license switch. You can read the manifest at opentf.org. This is notably an initiative rather than a trade association a la the OpenELA. The folks behind the effort say they would like the hypothetical Terraform fork to be hosted and maintained by an existing organization like the CNCF. More to come on this story, I'm sure. Okay, now maximum wide zoom out to the industry as a whole. Stack Overflow released its annually delightful developer survey, collecting data and sentiment from more than 90,000 developers. There's a lot to dig through in the results, as always, but here are some of the highlights. JavaScript continues its reign as the most commonly used language for the 11th year running. Postgres sees the top spot from MySQL as the most commonly used database, reflecting a pronounced ascendance in the professional sphere that overcame MySQL's widespread use among those learning to code. In our cloud-native corner of the world, Docker remained on top of the other category of most commonly used tools at over 51%. That other category can be a little funny with everything that's included, but that's where we see tools like Docker and Kubernetes year over year. Over 46% of respondents described Docker as a tool they want to use in the next year, which was the highest desired ranking for any tool in the category, vastly exceeding the other contenders by at least double and often much, much more. Kubernetes came in number three on the desired rankings at about 25%, continuing its interesting and relatively high ranking from last year. Docker and Kubernetes each ranked among the most highly admired technologies as well in that other category at 75% and 71% respectively. Unsurprisingly, this year's survey was very, very interested in AIML. In the admired desired ranking, 75% of devs said they wanted to use ChatGPT for AI search in the next year. Meanwhile, according to a study from Purdue University that analyzed ChatGPT's answers to over 500 Stack Overflow questions, the large language model gave incorrect answers 52% of the time, but a third of human readers preferred those false answers to others, with their preference based on characteristics like lucidity and apparent correctness. So among the body of ChatGPT answers that human readers preferred, 77% were false. A lot of bad answers that people like to hear. Cool. Sticking in the developer ecosystem for a moment, former NPM staff engineering manager Darcy Clark reported a major vulnerability in NPM. He calls the bug manifest confusion, which refers to potential confusion between the metadata for a package and the actual contents. This confusion stems from the fact that there's never any complete registry-side validation that a package's contents are as represented in the metadata. The public registry trusts that this has all been sorted out on the client side. So, like, trust but don't verify. This leaves the whole system very susceptible to supply chain attacks and sort of kneecaps any tools that analyze or otherwise draw conclusions from the public registry metadata. Clark describes this bug in depth in a blog post at blog.vlt.sh, as well as on the JS Party podcast, and those are definitely worth a look and a listen, especially for anyone working in the Node ecosystem. We'll close on a somber note. Earlier this month, the community learned that Vim creator Bram Molinar passed away at age 62. In addition to creating and maintaining Vim, Molinar worked on tools like Google Calendar at Google and founded the International Childcare Fund Holland to support AIDS orphans in Uganda. Molinar directed any funds he received for work on Vim towards this nonprofit since 1995. It's a pretty incredible thing to help so many people with a weird, wonderful Linux text editor that people love so much they make bumper stickers about it. If you'd like to donate to Molinar's charitable organization, the website is iccf.nl. All right, that's a wrap for today. Subscribe to Radio Cloud Native wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, and all the rest. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.